Hey, it's your man KJ. We back. Dr. Sai, what you got for me this year?
You rocking with the village. Let's get it.
We back, y'all. 2017. Welcome to the village. It's your man KJ. I'm live on a Friday and you are politicking with the village. So let's jump right into these topics. Here is just me today. I'm gonna go ahead and give it to you real smooth, real quick, and send you on the rest of your day, and you guys will be able to enjoy the recorded version of this show next week. But for those of you that are tuning in live, I appreciate you. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with me and I appreciate it. Thank you very much. So anyways, village, we are live. Just going to talk about some things going on in the world politically here. We're looking right now. Let's talk about this this big thing. Let's look at the political side of what's going on with Franken and all the sexual assault allegations that are literally happening in our political arena. We're looking at. Let's talk about Al Franken and President Trump and what's going on with that. Now, most people are literally upset because all these sexual allegations are coming out, and I'm one that's upset. I said about this. If we take this from a pure perspective of a sexual allegation, should not be a Republican issue or a Democrat. A conservative, a liberal, progressive—it shouldn't be anything like that, and that's something that we have to realize. And it's literally, to me, in a sense, it's coming down to a fact that it's essentially it's almost non-bipartisan. Like there's so many people that are saying, "Well, this person has done this," "Well, this person has done that." That should not even be an issue. Speaking politically in regards to sexual assault, sexual allegations, it should never be an issue. Regardless of where a person stands politically, if somebody, male or female, man, woman, whatever, if they say that they've been sexually abused or sexually assaulted, both sides of the aisle need to come together and not blame. And that's what I'm seeing, and that's what really it bugs me about all this. What happened is what happened. There's nothing we can do. We can't go back and correct that. You know, all we can do is move forward as a people and learn how to not do that to anybody, man or woman. This should never be a thing where we're looking at this through a political lens. Because when you look at it through a political lens, of course, feelings are going to get involved. Mixed emotions are going to get involved. And that's one of the things that annoys me. I'm sick of the left saying, and this is from a liberal, I'm sick of the left saying, well, he did this, and, you know, what about this? And I'm sick of the right saying, well, what about this? And he did that. Again, we cannot sit up here and debate whether this is a political issue. We can't throw politics into this. This needs to be an issue of you're a human being and I'm a human being and you've been wronged. Now we have to figure out a way to correct that. And that's as simple as it should be. I don't even think that, I don't think politics should ever be involved in this. And the reason why I'm bringing up Franken's name, Senator Al Franken, he's recently been, I don't necessarily want to say charged, but the allegations of sexual assault have been brought against him. And rightfully so. Like if you haven't been paying attention to the news lately or any kind of social media, tune into Welcome to the Village Facebook page, and you know everything is posted there. You can see it. I've posted it. It's there. But there is a photo of Senator Al Franken, and he is literally putting his hands on a woman's breast. She's an ABC news radio commentator, something to that nature. And so we see the photo of him putting his hands on her breast. He's done. Done deal. I will be the first one to tell you that after he goes through the ethics board and they review everything, if they decide that he needs to step down, he needs to step down. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's how I feel. There should never be an incident where you're caught on camera doing something. And, you know, that's essentially eyewitness testimony. You're recorded with picture, which is forever. People fail to remember that. And also the young lady that was assaulted, you know, she gave her story on CNN. And it's hard for her because nobody wants to be that person that comes forward and ruin someone. But, you know, at the same time, like, these stories have to come forward. You can no longer live in a society where, you know, we kind of sweep things under the rug. We can't do that anymore because when you sweep stuff under the rug, then all of a sudden you have the issues of something comes up and rears up and bites you in the butt 10, 15, 20 years later. And that's something that has to be remembered. But again, the reason why I'm bringing up Senator Al Franken, is because there are some issues. There are some glaring differences in how things are being treated politically. Now, Senator Franken has said, hey, this is what I've done. I've done it. I apologize. Please forgive me, right? But he is also understanding that if he has to step down, he will step down. And I'm good with that. I'm good with that logic. I'm good with that mindset, that mentality. Now, if we take this from a perspective of what what he's going through, then we have to look at it from the perspective of the glaring differences that I personally am seeing. And this is just my personal thoughts. So when you look at those differences, you see Al Franken, you see Roy Moore, and you see the allegations after allegation after allegation. He was banned from a mall. I don't know this woman, but he signed her yearbook and things of that nature. You know, again, politically, of course, he's going to deny it. He's going to. That's just how it works. But to say that you didn't know this woman is one thing. And you didn't do these things, you know what? Let a court of law figure that out. So he's doing what he's supposed to do, right? I think if Al Franken were in the same position where there was no video or photographic evidence, you know, truthfully, I honestly believe that Al Franken would respond the same way. But because Roy Moore, there's no pictures or anything of that nature, then essentially he's allowed to mush on. And if that's the case, then so be it. But he definitely needs his day in court, right? He's definitely needing his day and his time in court. These women are accusing him of a crime. Now, this crime happened years ago, but that should not matter. Sexual assault is sexual assault. To me, this speaks bigger to not necessarily, well, it's sexual assault is a big issue in itself. Let's go ahead and lay that out for what it is. But the bigger issue for me is this is a character issue. And before you guys jump on me about, well, what about Bill Clinton? Well, Bill Clinton was a jerk as well. Let's just go ahead and say it. But here's the difference between what my opinion, this is my opinion now, the difference that I see between Bill Clinton, Al Franken, Roy Moore, President Trump, the things that I see is, you know, I look at this from the lens of Al Franken has said, look, I did it. Roy Moore saying, I didn't do it. This is a character issue. This is strictly about your character now. You have all these witnesses lining up saying, you've done this, you've done this, you've done this. But you're not willing to have the character to say, I didn't do it. And if that's what it, if you didn't actually do it, then so be it. again, stand in front of a court of law, you know, get up there, say, I didn't do it, and you guess what? Exactly. Innocent until proven guilty. But to me, in this case, in this specific case, you cannot go forward as a politician. Again, and I'm going to keep saying it, Al Franken, he probably should step down, right? Because there's photographic evidence of what he did. And truth be told, I was hoping that he was going to make a run for president in 2020. But, you know, that's kind of stained. That's done. I can't support that, right? Because here's the bigger picture with how this comes off and how people see this. Again, a non-political side of this says, if he did it to one, how many others has he done this to, right? The same thing can be said for Roy Moore. There are multiple cases that are coming up against him, the same as President Trump, multiple cases. But we're not talking about those cases. We're not discussing those things. And that's what bugs me about this. You know, people can say the media is not covering this fairly. I don't think they're doing it any justice as well, because there's so many other cases. If you're going to judge one in this arena, you have to judge all in the same arena. I don't care who the president is. I don't care if you are a supporter of the president. Wrong is wrong and right is right. Right? But these issues are not being addressed. And that's what I'm seeing. That's what I personally am looking at. I don't care. I'm not gonna say I don't care, but the end result is, if the ethics board finds him guilty, then the ethics board finds him guilty. He needs to step down, and this is in reference to Al Franken. Now, for Roy Moore, of course, he's denying all the allegations. The only way to truly move forward is, in my opinion, you cannot have him as a U.S. senator. You cannot, not with these allegations looming over his head. For Roy Moore, Al Franken, these allegations, right? They have to be substantiated. They have to have the evidence. And there's so many women coming forward that, at the end of the day, this type of thing cannot just be overlooked. So I'm really truly hoping that we get to the bottom of this. I'm not going to sit up here and say that Roy Moore is guilty, because I don't know the man and I don't know what happened with the story. So, you know, that's correct. I was going to say that, Sean. Roy Moore, that was my next point, actually, is Roy Moore is going to lawyer up, which from what I'm understanding after reading certain different blogs and stuff like that, it's actually coming down to him having to lawyer up, because there is enough allegations against him. Now, people always say, well, one, okay, two, okay, three or more, now we have something that we have to figure out, because what we cannot do is sit up here and take one person, okay, one person, you know, we may or may not be able to go forward. You possibly can, right? With the right amount of evidence and circumstance and things of that nature. Two, people start to look at you a little funny. Now you get into the three or more, and now people are really looking at you. And from what I'm understanding, there's multiple young ladies that were essentially in high school that are coming forward. So that's something that needs to be reviewed. And again, remove the politics out of this. This is not about the politics. I know this is politicking with the village, but you have to essentially step back and remove the political aspect of this. This should not ever, ever be a situation where we're taking sexual assault and we're turning it into a political point or a political grandstand. We cannot do that. These young women are not looking to be politically correct. They were treated incorrectly. Or they felt they were treated incorrectly. Now, I don't know if the man is guilty or not. I don't know if Al Franken is guilty or not. Though Al Franken has the photographic evidence, that's going to be pending against him. But I think the bigger issue, like I said earlier, it's a character issue. If you have issues where it's multiple young women, high school girls at the time, accusing you of this, that's a character issue. And some will say that this is nothing but an attempt to destroy his character, because if you look at this from now, I'm going to switch to a political point. If you look at this from a political point, you get the aspect of, his character is now being destroyed. We see that. Not, you know, it is what it is, but his character is being destroyed in a red state. And this essentially could be the beginning of trying to flip a red state and flip it blue, or maybe even purple. I'm colorblind. It doesn't matter. It's a joke. But essentially, we have to figure that out. And that's what could be at stake at this point. So for those of you that are trying to, like myself, look at this from a non-political aspect, I encourage you to continue to do so, because that's what needs to be done. And that's how it needs to happen. We cannot just keep diving at this from a political. It's a character issue. The political side is this man is looking bad in a red state, which ultimately possibly could flip purple in 2018. And if it flips purple in 2018, possibly could flip blue in 2020. So that's something that people need to think about. All right. So let's move on here to this next topic here. I got all my stuff lined up, everything ready to go. Checking sound, checking volumes, looks good. All right. So this next topic here, the GOP tax plan. You know, there have been many, many things going on with this tax plan, and I have a short clip of how serious it's actually getting on over this GOP tax plan, this proposed tax plan. I'm trying to wait for the clip to load up here. So you guys just give me a quick second and I'm rolling with it.
The commercial free plan on CBS All Access.
Sorry about that, Village. Okay, so just trying to get this thing loaded up here. Let's discuss this GOP tax plan and what it actually means for middle class Americans, middle class families. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and play this clip. I'm going to share it with you guys. You guys can watch it with me, and we can go from there. So let's go ahead and let's dive into this here. Do a screen share. You guys can go ahead and lab and watch with me. And boom. All right, hit play.
Republican tax overhaul.
Rich, regular middle, we do a tax
regular order.
Middle class.
Regular order.
Democrat Sherrod Brown and Republican Orrin Hatch argued last night over who benefits from the GOP plan. The heated exchange came after Republicans successfully voted to move the bill to the Senate floor. Nancy Cordes is on Capitol Hill. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning. At the heart of this argument is new analysis by congressional number crunchers who find that while the plan lowers taxes at first, it would actually raise them by 2027 for anyone making under $75,000 a year.
When Republicans are in power, the first thing they want to do is give tax cuts to the rich. That's just it's in their DNA.
At the end of the all-day Senate finance meeting, Ohio Democrat Sherrod Brown's attack on the new Republican tax plan got under the skin of Chairman Orrin Hatch.
I've been here working my whole stinking career for people who don't have a chance. And I really resent anybody saying that I'm just doing this for the rich. Give me a break.
Mr. Chairman, the public believes it.
I'm not through. I get kind of sick and tired of it.
Democrats say Republicans are rushing the bill through Congress. They're also upset that the plan eliminates Obamacare's individual mandate, cuts the corporate tax rate to 20%, and eliminates Americans' ability to deduct state and local taxes.
Over and over again.
Wait,
how many
times?
Senator Hatch took Brown's charges personally.
And what you said was not right. That's all I'm saying. I come from the lower middle class originally. We didn't have anything. So don't spew that stuff on me. I get a little tired of that crap. I like you personally very much, but I'm telling you, this bull crap that you guys throw out here really gets old after a while. To do it right at the end of this was just not right.
The House passed its tax plan yesterday, and Senate Republicans are hoping to hold a Senate vote on their bill right after Thanksgiving. They insist that these tax hikes will never actually happen for low and middle income earners because Congress will simply renew some of the provisions in their plan that are set to expire. Charlie.
Thanks.
Okay, so as you guys saw, I got a little bit heated. I mean, not necessarily heated. You know, it just got a little elevated. I mean, there's a difference between, as we'll call it, political heat versus versus anything else, right? Like, you know, people argue and things of that nature. And, you know, you go from there, right? But what I am going to say is the GOP tax plan, it, you know, if you've actually sat and read it, and I can't tell you point for point, but I've actually gone over it the little bit that I've seen. It seems like it's remnants of the trickle down. Now, the only way trickle down actually works is if these businesses actually invest in invested their savings from you know, these corporate tax breaks that they're going to get, because there's all kinds of corporate tax breaks built into this, right? And so there's another video that I'm actually looking for right now. A friend of mine posted it earlier, and so I want to try to find that video for you guys. But what I'm essentially saying is, you know, I don't know if this is actually going to help the middle class. And that's what people need to really think about. I don't know if this is going to actually help the middle class in the ways that we think. Now, will it? Gosh, how can I say this? Will it make money for the 1%? Yes, but I'm not going to negate the fact that it seems like there are some things built in that essentially can help middle class, essentially, but you have to make over a certain amount of money. And that's the thing that if you don't kind of fall into that ballpark, then you can be screwed. Then you can actually be screwed. So I am definitely looking for a different outcome with all this here. So let me go ahead and enlarge this video here for you guys. I am also going to screen share one more time. And I'm going to let you guys watch this short clip. It's about a minute and a half long. And so let's go ahead and let me do this correctly here. Screen share. This is the beauty of podcasting. And you have to control everything. I actually kind of like it. It kind of teaches me. I'm on a friends page, so you guys don't pay attention to her friends list and all this other stuff here. Let's see here. We're going to do that. And
I'm a super rich guy, and I do not need a tax cut. As much as the super wealthy like me like to believe that we're the center of the universe, it turns out not to be true. Middle-class consumers are the center of the economic universe. When workers are paid more, they buy more haircuts, they go out to eat more often, they buy cars and dishwashers. That is the thing that drives the economy, and that's the thing that forces business people like me to create jobs. The people who are selling this tax cut are telling you that on average, we're all going to get thousands of dollars in tax savings. But the truth is, I'm getting a lot. You're getting peanuts and getting screwed. What they're telling you is that this giant tax cut for corporations will turn into jobs or increasing wages for workers. That's a trickle-down lie. The evidence is very, very clear. There is no connection between dropping corporate tax rates and job growth or median wage growth or any growth except increasing the bank accounts of the very rich. Corporate profits are at an historic high. They're double the rate that they once were. If it was true that more profits for corporations turned into wages for workers, then workers would be doing great. If these folks were serious about actually growing the economy, they wouldn't give one penny of tax cuts to the very rich or to big corporations. Share this video if you think that the super rich and big corporations don't need a tax cut.
Okay, so again, looking at it from the perspective of trickle-down economics, this is something that was tried under the Reagan administration, and it seems like this seems to, no matter what Republican runs, it seems that this always wants to make a return. And we learned that with President Reagan, trickle-down doesn't necessarily work. If you think about the number of businesses and the tax breaks that are going to come, again, I said, if these businesses are willing to raise the wages of their employees, but at the same time not raise the cost that trickle down to distributors and marketers and things of that nature, then we'll see a difference in how our economy grows. But if you plan on paying your employees more, but you raise your price at the same time, then it's not going to do anything. We essentially stay where the hell we're at, right? And we're looking at this from a trickle-down aspect of trickle-down economics does not work. Again, it didn't work under President Reagan. It's not going to work now. It's not going to work. It's not an efficient way to run our economy. But, okay, I'm over here reading comments. Trickle-down works only if the employer shares a majority of his tax savings with the employees. Exactly. That was the point that I was actually making, Sean. Thank you. Unless they actually do all these different things, they share, they don't raise their prices, they don't try to make their bottom line be a certain amount, then it doesn't matter. It's not going to work. And we'll just continue to see the 1%, as they're called, just making more money, padding their pockets, stacking their bank accounts, and things of that nature. And that's why I don't think it's going to work. Now, again, if they make the investments, then we can go forward. If they don't, then we'll just stay where we're at. So this GOP tax plan, if it actually goes through, then, you know, so be it. You know, there's nothing that we as everyday citizens can do. We can complain, we can go and write letters to our congressmen, but essentially when they're in that room and they're casting their votes, they cast their votes. And whoever is lining their pockets with the most money is essentially who is going to get their way or get what they want. So all we can do is wait and see. That's essentially what's going to happen. We have to wait and see what's going to happen here. All right, so let's move on here. There were some other things going on with the GOP tax plan as well. Now, whether you are a supporter of the Obamacare or Affordable Care Act, where however you want to phrase it or anything else, essentially, I believe in the Affordable Care Act, and I'm going to say this as someone who's progressive. I think our country benefited. There were many Americans that were, of course, anti-President Obama for various reasons. I'm not going to dig into that right now. I'm not going to dig into the fact that there were people that were highly anti-President Obama. We all know the reasons, and we'll leave it at that. Now, essentially, I'm going to look at this from a personal aspect. There were members of my family that were able to get health care based on the initiatives that the Affordable Care Act offered. Now, if I look at it from a personal aspect, the fact that I had members of my family that were able to get help based on this, I can't argue with it. Do I have to pay a little bit more in taxes? So be it. But I would rather pay a little bit more in taxes and know that a family member can essentially go into a hospital and be taken care of and not have to worry about these looming bills. Because there are many Americans who would rather just, I just have to deal with it. and they deal with it and they deal with it and they kill over dead because they don't have the money and they're too scared to go to a hospital because of how much money it's going to cost. That's what Obamacare did. It gave opportunity for people with pre-existing conditions to be seen. It made it affordable for the lower class to actually be seen by doctors and nurses and get the health care they need. You know, and there will be many arguments against what I'm saying. Oh, there's, you know, we got Medicare, Medicaid, you know, all these different programs for healthy kids, all these different things. But there are people that fall in this window of, they don't fall into the window of the, you know, of course, the healthy kid or the Medicare, Medicaid, unless there is some kind of situation that allows them to qualify for this program. But essentially, Obamacare was trying to bring healthcare to everybody. And that's one of the things that I enjoyed about it. It's bringing healthcare to a level that everybody will be able to afford. Now, with the new GOP tax plan stepping into play here, healthcare for is at risk here under this tax plan. And this is a story I pulled out of the Chicago Tribune. Healthcare for millions at risk as Republican tax plan looks for revenue. I'm going to read some of this here. The Republican tax plan are suddenly looking a lot more like healthcare bills with provisions that may affect coverage and increase overall expenses for millions of families. The House version of the tax bill, which President Donald Trump endorsed on Tuesday, would end a deduction that allows families of disabled children and elderly people to write off large medical expenses. The Senate plan would repeal the Obamacare requirement that most Americans carry insurance, a move that insurers promise would raise premiums in the nationwide individual insurance market. So this is kind of a twofold thing here. If you look at it from the perspective of, you know, it's a personal and a financial thing here. When you look at the families of disabled children and the elderly being able to write off large expenses, the elderly have large expenses. They need more medications. They need more physical therapy. They have more issues, right? And then disabled children. I mean, essentially, these disabled children cannot control what has happened to them. And that's why you need to have to look at it. So being able to write off large medical bills, expenses, whatever you want to call it, is essential for some people because they're not able to go forward. And some people couldn't afford this without Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, whatever you want to call it. And so with that in mind, that's what some people are seeing for it. The regular everyday people. Now, on the flip side of that, there was always the aspect of, I don't want to be forced into buying healthcare. And I still get that. To this day, I still get that. I understand where people are coming from in regards to being forced into a healthcare plan, right? There are young people out there that think they're invincible. I was one of them. I probably would have had a major much bigger argument if this would have been enacted during my 20, 21, early 20s and stuff like that. I may have had a bigger stink about all this. But now that I'm in my mid-30s, I'm 36 years old, essentially I do understand how important it is because you never know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen to you while you're driving home from work. Let's say you have children and they don't have care. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't understand what's going to... It's life. Life does happen. Somebody could be having a bad day or not paying attention on their cell phone and run through a light and hit you. Or you're on the freeway and they hit you and you're in this situation where you don't have health care. Again, I get what people were upset about. But if you look at it from an aspect of we're trying to make this more affordable for everyone, then to me your argument is kind of mute. And I get there are people out there that were essentially paying a lot of money for the Affordable Care Act. They were coming out of pocket a lot of money. And some people just didn't want healthcare. They would just rather deal with it as the situation comes. Okay, fine, I get that. All right, so let's read a little bit more of this here article from the Chicago Tribune here. The provisions would help offset the cost of large tax cuts for corporations and individuals, but the move has sparked a new wave of opposition from the healthcare industry and others who are concerned about its impact. The same political headwinds that tanked Republican efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act earlier this year. Either proposal, if signed into law, could be devastating for some families with disabilities, says Kim Mushino, Vice President of Public Policy at the Autism Society, a Bethesda, Maryland organization that advocates for people with autism. I have autistic family members, so I get that. Families depend on that deduction. And if they deal with the individual mandate, that's going to cut 13 million people from their health care. That's a lot of Americans that, and these parents that depend on this stuff. You know, there are families that, if it wasn't for Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, whatever you want to call it, if it wasn't for them having this care, you know, care for people with autism is, it varies. You could have a person who's very, who has a mild form of it. Sometimes you can kind of pick up on certain things, certain cues. But there are those that, for example, my youngest brother, my little brother, he's got a form of autism. And he's going to be, you know, in the care of somebody for the rest of his life. That's just what it is. You know, when it comes time, my sister and I will have to step up and figure it out. But there are those that right now are dealing with this as parents. And they're going forward saying, hey, you please don't take this from us. This has helped us dramatically. So let's read a little bit more of this here. Republicans and some conservative groups, though, argue that removing the penalty for uninsured individuals would represent a tax cut for many low-income people who pay it now. Americans for Tax Reform, the group led by anti-tax crusader Grover Norquist, I remember that guy, said that the Internal Revenue Service IRS data from tax year 2015 showed that 79% of households that paid a penalty earned less than $50,000 a year. So that goes to show you, you know, these penalties, when they hit the, when they hit people making 35, maybe 40 grand a year, that's a huge, that's a big thing to be hit. You know, if you're making less than 50 grand a year and you're hit with a penalty for not having this. So Obamacare wasn't perfect. We know that. It was brought on, and guess what? Like any other thing, it can be amended, it can be fixed, it can be corrected, but just getting rid of it or getting rid of individual mandates, it can be hurtful to some, and it can be great for others. So, you know, it's really going to depend on the individual person. My wife and I were good. We both have health care through our jobs. So we're good. Our children are covered. And even if we didn't have jobs, of course, we would make sure our kids are taken care of. We're both veterans, so we can obviously go to the VA and be seen. We just got to pay out of pocket. It's better than, you know, going to Kaiser or going to another healthcare facility and not having insurance. We can be seen, we can be helped. And I'll leave it at that. But again, this is really going to boil down to how many people, or not how many, what people are being affected and how they are essentially being affected by all of this. And that's the biggest portion about all this. Like I said, it's a damned if you do and a damned if you don't situation, you know. And please, Village, understand I'm trying to find, when I go and look for links and explanations and things of that nature, I don't just review one news source. And of course, you know, I went to Fox News and looked at their website and a few others. And, you know, it's glaring differences in ideals and beliefs. So one side absolutely hates Obamacare. The other side loved it because it helped them. I, on the other hand, I hated it when it was rolled out because I didn't feel like this was the way to do it. But once it was rolled out and I saw people getting helped and getting these services that they desperately needed when they were when they have these pre-existing conditions and they could get help and things of that nature, that's what sparks me to say, you know what, we need to move forward, we need to mush on, we need to make this better for everyone. And I believe that there is a way that we can make this better for every American. Right, I believe that there's ways that we can absolutely do that. But we as a society have to come together and say, let's work this together, let's figure this out. But removing healthcare from people, from Americans, from hardworking Americans, because not everybody is a millionaire. Not everybody wants to even be in that situation, right? They don't want to be there. They want to be able to raise their kids, send them to college, live a great life, go and work their job, go home, retire, and then that's it. And they're happy, right? We should not take that from them. If that's their American dream, then so be it. But at the same time, we shouldn't penalize them because they want this for their life. They don't want to be this. They don't want to be a millionaire, a billionaire. They want to be comfortable with life. And I'm good with that. And again, we should not remove, and we cannot remove healthcare from those that are actually being benefited from this. So essentially, Village, I'm really looking forward to seeing how this is all going to play out, because we have to figure this out. This is our issue. You know, there are other countries that have great health care. And one of the arguments I hate hearing is, well, you know, these other countries, they come here, and specifically with Canada. You know, I watched a short press briefing. A doctor from Canada literally schooled this Republican legislator and was like, no, our doctors do not leave Canada and come to America. Actually, your doctors are leaving here and coming to us. So there it is. All right, Village. So I am the man, KJ, and this has been Politicking with the Village. If you want to get a hold of me, hit me up on Twitter at Enlighten My Mind. Please follow me there. You can also follow me at W2TheVillage. That's the Village Twitter handle. If you want to get a hold of Slink Grindstone, that's at Slink Grindstone. Chance is at Chance W. Brown. The show can be heard on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Podomatic by searching Welcome to the Village. Crowdcast episodes. If you guys head to Crowdcast, subscribe to the show through Crowdcast. So that way, every time we go live, you'll know, right? Because right now, Politicking with the Village is on Fridays. But we have our beautiful co-host, Angelana. She is a college student. So we do kind of flip-flop between Tuesday, Thursday, or Wednesday. It's somewhere in that ballpark. And we go from there. And I'm Sean, I see your comment. Thank you, my man. I really appreciate that. I do essentially, I can't just say one side. I have to say it all. Like, you know, I don't want to be another person that perpetrates this. Am I a liberal? Yes, I am, because I believe in certain things. I believe in women's rights to choose. I believe it's not gay marriage. It's just marriage. That's what I believe. I don't think anybody should be penalized for that. But anyways, Google phone is 619-202-1562. You can email me at welcometothevillage@gmail.com. Website's under construction. The missus has convinced me that don't do this by yourself. You're doing too much. Pay for someone to do it. So I'm putting my ducats aside and I'm going to go ahead and get that website done professionally, because it's the only way to do it right. Etsy page is up. Go check out the Etsy page. There's designs there. There's another design. The missus is helping me work on another design. We have a shirt guy, but we're like I said, we're trying to work with him, because there are designs that I have that I don't just want to go and use Teesprings. I want to use him because it's more personal. It's something that he can create the logo, the design, all this good stuff. But if you guys go to our Etsy page, search Welcome to the Village on Etsy, We have a couple of shirts, wristbands, and I'm also working on a bathroom line products. I'm working on some bath balls, and I want you guys to go check those out. They should be posted this weekend. Today is November 17th, 2017. I hope to have those posted by this weekend. I'm going to be doing some work on that this weekend, research, making new ones, and figuring out the overall pricing and the things that I want to do from there. So if you guys go check out the Etsy page sometime this weekend. Of course, if you follow me on my personal page, you guys will see it. And if not, hey, go check out Welcome to the Village. Share the page. Grow the audience. Let people know this is what we do. This is what I love doing. Essentially, I want to make this my full-time gig. I'm not going to sit up here and say I'm a reporter. I just want to give you an open, honest perspective on the things that I see. Like I said, I am a liberal, but I can read stuff for myself and make my own opinions. That's how I am. So, Village, with that in mind, you could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with me today. I thank you so much for tuning in. We love you. We thank you. God bless you. Have a great night, everybody. Bye.